Welcome to the Outsource Accelerator podcast. This is a short format podcast where we explore business and outsourcing mastery. My name is Derek Gallimore, and I am really excited to bring you the leading podcast in outsourcing. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Outsource Accelerator podcast. My name is Derek Gallimore, and this is episode number 236. So today we are talking to the founder and CEO, Russell Meiselman. He is the founder and CEO of Clark Outsourcing. So this is an outsourcing supplier out in Clark, and it's an outsourcing supplier with a difference because you should just really check out their facilities. They are based in this massive warehouse. The warehouse, of course, has a lot of desks in it. It has space for about 450 staff, but it also includes a jiu-jitsu hall. It has a Statue of Liberty, and it has a lot of containers that are being reshaped into private offices. So a really incredible facility. We actually recorded a video live with Russell. So if you want to go and check out YouTube, then please do. And of course, we actually did a BPO tour of this facility, so you can also check that out on our website or on YouTube as well. So an interesting conversation with Russell. He has been in the Philippines now for many, many years, and he has a lot of experience and a lot of lessons. So I really enjoyed this conversation with Russell. And I hope you do too. If you want any of the show notes, then go to outsourceaccelerator.com/236. Enjoy. Hi, and welcome back, everybody. Today we are joined by Russell Meiselman. Hi, Russell. How are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you doing?
Good, good. And we're actually on site, unusually, so people might hear a little bit of difference in the sound. But we are in your facility, which is called Clark Outsourcing. It is in Clark, which maybe you can actually even explain what Clark is to the listeners and how it differs to Manila. But I suppose initially, so, you know, we're in your facility. It's an incredible facility. People can also see this on YouTube, so they can see the striking difference of your place. And it's just really fantastic to see, you know, modern, new, really interesting work environments coming through. And again, it flies in the face of people thinking that the Philippines is some sort of backwater or a sweatshop.
Or in the middle of the hole.
Yeah. So it's
in
super.
A cave somewhere, right?
Yeah, for sure. So, Russell, I suppose initially, if you wouldn't mind just introducing yourself and a little bit about Clark Outsourcing.
Yeah, sure. So my name is Russell Meiselman. Good job on the last name.
Thanks.
I'm originally from Arizona. I've been in the Philippines now 8-9 years. Clark Outsourcing is we really specialize in small to medium-sized businesses. We don't really work with very large companies. I would say the main reason is just our model works better with small to medium-sized companies that are striving to grow their businesses, and so that's our main target. And we really try to focus more on the customer side of things versus, you know, scaling. We're not a very large company. We're not tens of thousands of employees. We're very small. We have the small business feel, and we like to think that we have big business results. So that's kind of our thing. So it's an interesting space. You mentioned the space and all of that, which I'm sure we'll get into.
So just to explain a little bit about Clark Freeport Zone, then, because the majority, I'm based in Manila, and you know I'm slightly biased towards Manila, but there's a whole country out there, and so what is Clark?
Clark is interesting. Clark is the old American Air Force Base. It used to be run by the Americans back in the 80s and 90s. I think in the 90s is when they gave it back to the Philippine government. And essentially, it's a Freeport zone. So the infrastructure and everything, water, electric, internet, everything is run separately to its surrounding areas. It's about an hour and a half north of Manila, A lot of people don't know about it yet, except for the most recent developments, which I'm sure you've heard about, the new Clark City development and all of that. The Philippines is starting to take a look at Clark as the new growing city of the Philippines, really.
Because they're starting to move some of the government offices out here as well.
Yeah, the infrastructure is the biggest thing, right? So in Manila, as you know, traffic, right, it kills. I mean, sure, there's 100-story skyscrapers and that, but out here, just the way that things were built, you know, lines are run underground, roads are wider naturally, there's more space, it's less... not near the beach, it's kind of in more of a secure area, and so really that's the attractiveness of Clark, and to be honest with you, for most people that are out here doing business, it's the fact that it's an eco zone, so there's tax and duty free, there's a lot of incentives, and you can also own 100% of your business as a expat or a foreigner that is not a local Filipino. You can actually own 100% of your business.
Right, so it's another, you know, the significance of that is it's just easier doing business here. It reduces the friction, and again, for then that passes on to the clients here. It's just an easier environment.
The Philippine government focuses on foreign investment right here. They're pushing it. They support it. They try to reduce the amount of red tape. Of course, it can't be completely eliminated, but the bureaucracy is much less inside of Clark, and then there's little to no corruption in Clark in comparison to the Manilas or the other places that you could outsource to.
Right. And then, so Clark Outsourcing then, it's been going a while, and you say it's small, but, you know, again, I think we have different perspectives. In the West, you know, kind of
small, right?
10 people is a small company, maybe.
Yes.
Or maybe that's a medium-sized company, whereas you've got, how many staff have you got here?
Almost 300.
Right.
Almost 300. Just so, right, in that perspective, in the West, we're a larger company, right? But in comparison to some outsourcing companies that do exist, not only just here in Clark, but in the Philippines in general, they're in the tens of thousands of employees. And so we consider ourselves small, and to be honest with you, it's not, you know, for us, it's not an insult. We want to be small. I know, you know, I won't say 100%, 90-something percent of our staff first names, and I know where they're from, and I personally have a relationship with almost every employee here, so that is something that we want to continue. We don't really necessarily want to have employee 1,136 that works for customer 8 or whatever it is, right? It's just not the structure that we really wanted to build.
Sure. And so, you know, one of the most striking things about your office, obviously, is that it doesn't really feel like an office.
Yeah.
There's a Statue of Liberty out there, there's containers, shipping containers out there, a trampoline out there, and a jiu-jitsu hall. So what's your angle with that?
Really the biggest thing is employees.
Right.
We've been doing outsourcing for a long time, and you know, when it comes to outsourcing, people think of customer support or tech support or, you know, telemarketing, right? That's when people think telemarketing, that's the first initial reaction. What we do is we specialize in more high-level staff, so high-level accountants, financial paraplanners, engineers and AutoCAD, BIM operators, nurses is a big, you know, one that we really focus on. So when you're talking about that type of staff, like in any country, even in the West, those type of employees are what you consider professional level or higher level paid employees, and they just expect more, right? So a call center, just like in the West, a call center job as a telemarketing rep is a lower level position. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just it is what it is. And with that, they accept working in a cubicle situation. But with us, when you start, you know, you start talking about financial paraplanners and high-end engineers and architects, they need space. They need space to be creative. They need space to work. They need space to be able to walk around and let their creative minds work. And so what we found in our previous facilities were the cubicle space wasn't conducive to the abilities of the staff. And so what we built, like you said, the containers and the trampoline and the jiu-jitsu gym, is we focused it primarily around those higher level people that need a good life work-life balance, that operate at a very high level, that need to be able to take, you know, a 10-minute break and go sit on the couch or go sit in a nap pod, or, you know, go to the yoga class, one of the yoga classes that are held each day, or the jiu-jitsu, and let some stress out and be creative with the graffiti walls and all these things, right? And so that's what we really drove us to building a facility like this, is the creative mindset.
Right.
And of course, Google helps.
Yeah, Google having a sort of setting the bar for work environments.
Right, so. Yeah, Google setting the bar and kind of driving that atmosphere, right? So there's Google, there's WeWork, there's other big companies that have these dynamic workspaces. And they've proven it, they've tested it, that it works, and there's a reason they do it, and it's not by accident. And so having that, you know, where we don't have to spend tens of thousands of dollars investing and testing stuff out, we can follow the big boys and look and see what's working for them and kind of model it from that.
And it's a big education piece, isn't it? Because I mean, I was in New York only last week, and I was in a WeWork talking to companies within WeWork and trying to explain that outsourcing isn't just telesales, it is all of these incredible professions now, and you know, it's high value roles that can add to your business. And equally, you know, they're not sitting in these kind of factories, they're sitting in really exciting environments, at least as cool as WeWork.
Sure.
You know, so it's but people, and that's why I think there's such value in our discussions and videos to try and bring people over to the Philippines.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I'm really excited that there are people like you out there that are doing these videos. I think that is the biggest thing. I mean, even myself, I used to outsource myself. When I was in Arizona, I would outsource our telemarketing to India and the Philippines. And it's good. You know, it was fine. That was my perception of outsourcing, and it's fine. But there's exposure that needs to be had in this industry. People need to understand that just because you are a 3 to 5 person business in Oklahoma or in, you know, West Adelaide of Australia, that you can have an accountant to track your books. You can actually see if you're profitable or not, and see where you're losing, where you're bleeding, where you're not, and it's not going to cost you an arm and a leg. And it's important for people to understand that. And I think that's the biggest change in the entrepreneurial atmosphere, is that whether you want to believe it or not, you know, accounting, digital media, having a website presence, all this stuff is important, but it's not necessarily affordable unless you do it with, you know, outfits like this.
Yeah, and it's about, like, people are able to build a bigger company better, quicker, by accessing these resources. And it's and so we were talking previously about how you onboard your team, and a lot of it is about the sort of typical entrepreneur in the West, they're obviously very successful, but they don't quite realize how to plug outsourcing into their business. And that takes a little bit of hand-holding, a little bit of education. What is the process that you normally go through to make sure that prospective clients get the best out of outsourcing?
Yeah, I would say that's probably the number one reason why most companies don't outsource, to be honest with you. After speaking with people, like, they have the fears of, oh, you're in a third world country or international wires, and there's always these face value type of insecurities that companies have. But the real core reason is they have no idea what they would do. And if they did, how much would it cost, and how much of a playing margin, and I know that sounds crazy, nobody wants to play with their company money, but how much can they lose to try it out? And that's really what the concern is, I think, for most people. They don't really understand how to integrate it. And so the way that we do things, I mean, it's right or wrong or best practice or not, I think that the biggest thing that we try to do is I personally will go out and visit our clients and spend anywhere from a week to 3 weeks, depending on if they get annoyed with me and they want me to leave or if they've outsourced before or not. But essentially, what we do is we'll go and spend time working with their teams and those departments that are going to outsource their graphic design or their whatever it is, right? Their engineering team for their CAD operators, to find out what it is that they're lacking. What is the work that is actually going to be done, and how does that communication from the Western staff, home, you know, HQ staff employees to the outsourced employees, how does that communication work? What are projects that should be outsourced? What are projects that should not? And so spending the time with them and understanding their business is what we primarily try to do. And then when that's all said and done, I come back and I'll spend a week or so with my team. and onboard them on the client. What is this company trying to accomplish? What's being outsourced to us? What is the objective, and how these communication lines are going to work? And my team will take that and they'll run with it and they'll get everything onboarded. So by the time that the client actually has their first employee start with them, everybody is on the same page as far as how to pass projects back and forth, what the communication is going to look like, and really what to expect as far as production.
Mm. And do you see that clients, you know, obviously start small? I assume you encourage them to start small, but then very quickly they see the opportunity and it balloons up.
Yeah, yes, they do. But we try to regulate that. As you know, some people say it's crazy, like, hey, if somebody wants to add or start with you with 50 seats, would you do it? The answer is no.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's just, you know, to be honest with you, we haven't lost a client in almost 2 years, and I don't plan on starting now. Mm-hmm. Bringing on a client that has 50 seats that's never outsourced before is just a recipe for failure, right?
Mm-hmm.
So small problems, start with small teams. So, you know, have that small team first, sort out all your issues. We call it the three S's. You sustain it, the success, and then you scale it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of different things that you can do as far as securing larger campaigns and having them, you know, grow quickly. But to be honest with you, I think a fair, reasonable, especially for small, medium-sized businesses or even up to an SME size of company, no more than five to seven employees a month. If you're scaling more than that, you're probably having chips fall and missing gaps, and you're cutting corners that you probably shouldn't, right?
Right.
So I think that's a reasonable amount. Now, obviously, Amazon wouldn't be able to do 5 or 7 a seat, you know, a month. They would need 500 to 700 a quarter is what it's looking up for that type of company. But again, that's not the type of companies that we target.
Sure. Yeah. And then, because I'm fresh back from New York, actually,
sure,
I've got a lot of common objections that people bring forward. So,
sure, that's,
you know,
great. I love to hear them.
And it's funny because I think to us it's almost, we can see it, but then people that can't necessarily feel or touch it, it's sort of ambiguous. And, you know, I suggest for people to think of outsourcing really just as employment. You know, don't really think of it as anything different in terms of relationship. But people are concerned, maybe, how do they know their people are working?
Yeah.
How do they know they're doing the work? Do they need to put in fancy softwares? And how do they gauge the sort of output and relationship when people are sitting on the other side of the world?
Totally. So, you know, with more the traditional type of business models, right, remote workers or worker people that work from home is not a common thing. But in today's society, even, you know, if I'm in Phoenix, Arizona, mm-hmm. and I have somebody that's working for me in San Diego, right, so it's the same country they employ by me, but they work from home, I have ways to regulate that.
Mm-hmm.
To easily answer your question, though, is transparency. It's the biggest key. So for us, you hire the staff and they work directly for you. We have like the communication I was talking about earlier of how do you communicate with your staff. Usually via webcam. We have cameras set up on almost every workstation to where you can log in anytime and see your staff working for you. You don't need fancy software. We have account managers here that send you weekly reports and attendance and tell you what tasks were accomplished by your team this week and what things weren't and so on. And you should have daily communication. And you know, it's like if you were to, my number one answer, I guess, or my question to employees, to clients would be this, is if you were to employ somebody to work from home, what would you do? How would you do it?
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly the same thing here. The only difference is instead of them being down the road or being a couple hours drive away, they're on the other side of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it's the exact same concept, right? These are your employees that work in our office, and we just help to make sure that they show up and do the job that you need them to do. And essentially, that's the way that we run things. We try not to get too complex. Sure, there are softwares and things and all of this. Yes, if that's what you want to do, great. We'll help you do that. But I think most companies just want to know that there's somebody there watching their staff, right?
Absolutely. And then the interaction and the gray areas between what a BPO does and then the staff and then the client, how do the three interact? Because why, for example, can't a client just go and get a staff member?
Mm-hmm.
What are the value props for a BPO?
Yeah, huge, good question. The best clients that any BPO could ever want are people that have gone out and hired freelancers to work for them. because that answers all the questions. That objection just goes right out the window. The inconsistencies, the unreliability as far as connectivity. Maybe there's power outages or internet, or I'm sick today, or I can't work, or that project was delayed, or whatever issues that every single person has ever hired a freelance employee has ever experienced is the reason you would go with the BPO. We ensure all of that. We keep a very high-end infrastructure. We keep a very close-knit and interaction with every staff, employee on attendance, and what they can and can't do. And we verify their sickness and these things that do it. So the value proposition is really easy. What's that relationship look like? The clients, when they contact us in particular, I don't know if I'm pretty sure most BPOs work in the same fashion, is they need to be prepared to deal with the staff on the day-to-day operational side. What are the tasks? What are the projects? What are the duties of that employee? Everything else we handle, from payroll to HR to legal to IT to equipment to whatever it is that you could possibly think that's
Christmas bonus.
Christmas bonus, yeah. Christmas party, retention, swag bags, or a backpack full of cool.
And creating that community so they're there month after month.
Exactly. And so all of that is what we do. The day-to-day operational projects and stuff, that's what the clients need to be prepared to deal with. We don't, it's like this. Some companies, BPOs, they have a system where they charge hourly. $9 an hour, we'll do your process for you. Well, how is that going to work? How do they know your business? So for us, we're not even going to try to pretend and act like we can come in and do the work for you.
Yeah.
You know your business. You know how to manage your staff the way that you want to manage them. You do it.
It's like a short-term sell, isn't it? It's easier to sell that in the short term, but then it's not a long-term
success
solution.
It
yeah,
it can't be, because there's no cookie-cutter business, right? So it doesn't matter what business you are. Your processes for every industry and every brand is different from the next. So to think that a company could figure that out and do it successfully is really under the stick, if you ask me.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you mentioned the freelancers and Upwork, Freelancer itself, the platform, Tim Ferriss. I think that whole sector of society has done a lot for outsourcing because it's raised awareness, but then people try it. They go, I've used Upwork and it doesn't work. So the Philippines is rubbish, bad results, untrustworthy. Mm-hmm. And it takes a huge re-education now to say that that's not outsourcing. It's like trying to find some dude in Central Park at midnight to do your tax return, and that's not going to work.
Right. It's probably not the best decision. Yeah. Exactly right. Freelancer, Upwork, Odesk, whatever, all these other platforms are out there. They brought outsourcing to the forefront of people's, small entrepreneurs' mind. I think that was what's important. But what people don't really realize, I don't think, is outsourcing in the fashion that we do things in a BPO setting or some of the larger companies do. It's been around for a long time. Adam Smith, the inventor of economics, actually wrote a book, The Wealth of Nations, right? And he talks about the division of labor. And this was back in the 1600s or whatever it was. And so he's talking about letting the professionals do the professional work. If you are a mechanic, be a mechanic. But you hire an accountant and you hire a sales guy to do your sales. And that's the process, right? The division of labor. And so, Boeing and Airbus is probably the number one, the most productive outsourcing company in the world. They don't build a single thing for a single part of their airplane. They have the professionals of the glass and the nose and the seats and the seatbelt guy. All of these different contractors build all of these very high-end products and ship it in, and they assemble it and they slap their sticker on it. So they've figured out outsourcing to the extreme, right? The point that I think that I'm trying to make, though, is that outsourcing is meant to help enhance a company, and these freelancers and things, they're just there to make a buck. Right, and there's nothing wrong with it. They brought it to the table and they brought the awareness, but they're two different things. They're two different industries, if you ask me. Hiring somebody to work from home and hiring a company like Clark or anybody else to hire a staff and work in our facility, just two different games entirely.
Yeah. And as you say, Philippines, and I tell people this overseas, people think they're coming to a developing nation. And but the level of sophistication here is incredible. People have been outsourcing for 25 years, and their expertise at optimizing business processes is second to none.
Yeah.
And this is where I think the small and medium-sized businesses can get introduced to outsourcing and they can really be taken to the next level because they're sort of almost forced to mature their processes.
Yeah, you know, one of the biggest things that we learn in doing this and in the consulting that I do with our clients, and also once we get them onboarded, the best part, really, truly, the best thing that we do is some of our clients will actually outgrow us. We get to the point where if you're at 50 seats, in our opinion, 50 to 100 seats, it's time that you move on to getting what we call, you know, getting your own facility. Mm. You have 100 employees in another country. It's time that they're in your office with your brand on the wall, right? But the best thing is that, you're right, they evolve. So as companies grow, they grow their teams here, but it's really an awesome thing to watch. Like, we've had companies that come in and they'll hire one person, right? They'll hire an accountant. And over the course of the last 3-4 years, they now have a team of 25, and their business went from $1 million a year to 10 million. And it's just because they were able to document, right? So most small businesses, and I think most people listening and watching to your show would probably agree with this. How many people have an actual SOP, a standard operating procedure?
Things are just ad hoc, aren't they? In the West more, it's kind of like people use intuition and
figure it out.
Yeah. Whereas over here, it's no, stop, process, you know, like map your processes, structuring.
Yeah, standard operating procedure. I mean, like, you know, I've asked almost every company that we work with, can you send me the document of how you onboard a new employee? Mm. What do you mean onboard a new employee? Like, when you hire somebody new, like, what do you give them? What's the process? Who does what? Who creates what? Who inputs into the database and da-da-da? What's the step-by-step process of onboarding an employee? What do you mean? Well, you just onboard. You start the next day and we add them to the payroll and it's done. No, there's a process, right? Like, there's a right way of adding an employee, and there's a ad hoc way of doing it. And so, I think helping people understand that documenting process and everything, you're right, it's probably the biggest difference between what smaller companies do in the West and how almost every company here operates.
Yeah, absolutely. Amazing, Russell. So we're going to go and have a look around your facility now. So everyone out there in podcast land, I encourage you to go and go to YouTube and check it out.
Yes.
And so thank you so much for your time. If anyone wants to get in touch with you, if they want to know any more about you or Clark Outsourcing, how can they do that?
Really simple. Just go to the website, clarkoutsourcing.com, or you can send us an email, info@clarkoutsourcing.com. Very simple.
Thanks so much, Russell.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you.
That was Russell Meiselman of Clark Outsourcing. If you want to get in touch with Russell or know any more about Clark Outsourcing or anything that we mentioned in this episode, go to our show notes, which is at outsourceaccelerator.com/236. And as always, if you want to ask us anything, then just drop us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.